Joe, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
So Daniel Chara's broken finger in game four. I guess a lot of people wondering, though, why we didn't see a lot of him shooting earlier in the series. I guess we can understand why he didn't shoot in game five, six, and seven. But what about prior to that? Was Montreal doing anything different to not allow him to shoot?
I think he just has a hard time freeing himself up for shots from the point normally, because he's not, you know, the most agile, quick-footed guy around that's going to be able to move laterally with the puck to find that shooting lane. You know, that's something Dougie Hamilton and Torrey Krug are very good at, but Zdeno Chara just doesn't have the kind of skills and size and offensive ability to be able to do that. He's more of a stationary, you know, crank it all the way back and shoot it, and it takes him a while to wind up and shoot kind of guy. And because of that, when you're playing a shot-blocking team that fronts all the shots and is jumping in front of everything, it's harder to get shots off. And, of course, on the power play, he plays down low. He doesn't play on the point. So the shots aren't going to be plentiful down there. He just is more about screening the goaltender and getting the big body in front of the net and, you know, winning puck possession battles in the corner to retain possession. So earlier on, you're right, there weren't a lot of shots. I don't think that was going to change one way or the other because of the finger. Really, it was very noticeable. And I've been saying this on interviews today, even on TV, the last couple of days, that it was clear that something was wrong with him in game six and game seven. Way too many times you saw only one hand on the stick instead of two, which is, you know, a must have and an always thing for him. He's always got two hands on the stick. And you could see at times he just couldn't collect pucks cleanly. He couldn't throw passes cleanly. Like, everything was a struggle when he was receiving and getting rid of the puck. And also defensively, I think it had a lot to do with that kind of Olay play that he gave on Max Pacioretty in game six, where with that hand, he just didn't have any strength to go in and try to break it up and go after him. So it was pretty noticeable that something was wrong with his hand. And I do remember in game four when he got slashed on the hand and went out for a few minutes at the Bell Center and then came back. So it all kind of made sense when you thought about it.
Joe, I don't want to diminish the significance of fractured finger, especially one that requires surgery. It's certainly not just a little hairline thing. But give us your most honest take on Chara overall. To me, he just didn't look right. It doesn't take a vast intellect to see that, especially late in the series with the finger. But, you know, he's not a young man anymore. He's played a lot of hard hockey. Where's Zdeno at moving forward?
Yeah, he's definitely transitioning to a different sort of player. You know, not a guy that's going to be a 30-minute-a-night player anymore. And they were scaling back his minutes in these playoffs. He was only averaging around 25 minutes a night, where he averaged almost 30 minutes a night last year, and it was very clear that that caught up to him in the Stanley Cup Final against Chicago when he really slowed down. And, you know, minutes-wise, I honestly think he was okay. And, you know, until Game 6, he and Dougie Hamilton hadn't been on the ice for a 5-on-5 goal against in the entire series against Montreal. They had done a very good job as a shutdown pair. They had frustrated Max Pacioretty, who couldn't get anything done offensively. Thomas Vanek hadn't done anything 5-on-5. Yeah, he wasn't doing anything offensively, but he was doing the job defensively and doing it fairly well until he got hurt. And I think there was a big difference in the before and after there. And look, I'm not making any excuses for him. I just think that's what my eyes told me when I was watching him play. I saw a very different guy in the last couple of games. But it's more what you saw in the playoffs this time around is more what they're going to do with him. They're going to try to reduce the minutes a little bit. You know, he's going to go from 25 to 23 at some point to 20. You know, you're going to see the minutes for him start to diminish and go down a little bit as he's creeping up there at 37 years old. And they're going to try to, you know, spot him a little bit more to make sure that they can get the best out of him. You know, I still think at this point he's the best offensive defenseman in the league, and he's still a guy that you have to game plan around offensively when you go up against him. But let's not kid ourselves. He's getting older. The window is shutting for him to be that player. And, you know, the amount of workload you can heap on him is lessening each and every year. And, you know, in the next year or two, I would expect he's going to have a fairly reduced role for the Bruins, where he's not the top shutdown guy anymore.
Joe Haggerty joins us from Boston. Joe, Brad Marchand, you know, just he couldn't get under Montreal's skin, and then it seemed like he wasn't overly effective. Everybody knows what happened with Lucic after the series was over, and some people wonder if Boston maybe lost their discipline in this series. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they did to a degree, and I think that was one of the things that made Montreal a bad matchup for them, is they have a very unique ability to get the Bruins to take the bait, to get them to do things that that get them out of control and get them reckless, and to do things that get them out of their discipline and their game. You know, there's a lot of hate on both sides, and there was even before this playoff series started. You know, Milan Lucic hates Alexi Yemlin, and it was very clear in the handshake line that that is even stronger than it's ever been. There is a wide range of Bruins players that hate Dale Weiss, going back to his days with the Vancouver Canucks. There's a lot of Bruins players that don't very much like P.K. Subban's act on the ice and the way he goes about things. I think they now respect him even more than they did before, given the way that he played in that series and how he dominated them. And pretty much he and Carey Price, you know, won that series for the Montreal Canadiens with some help from some other guys. But, you know, they don't like the way he goes about his business, and I think that's very clear. Too, even David Krejci and Tomas Pekanec, even though they're countrymen and fellow Olympic teammates, don't really like each other that much, I think. So, you know, you put all that together, and you put that with the speed and the skill level of Montreal, which also really goes after a weakness of the Bruins. They're a slower team, and the speedy team's giving them trouble. And you combine the lack of discipline with the speed, and it's really a toxic combination for the Bruins that Montreal kind of uniquely provides them. And I really think if the Bruins had been able to get past Montreal, I think they would have beaten the New York Rangers. Do I think they would have beaten maybe like the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup final if it came to that? No, I don't think so. But I think the Montreal Canadiens were the only team in the East that could take the Bruins down, given how bad a matchup it is. And that's exactly how it played out in seven games.
So, Joe, does Boston then have to retool their team to add some speed so that they can take out the Canadiens next year?
I think they definitely just have to address the speed thing, because it's a glaring weakness on the team, and it's one of the few weaknesses that they have. Once they traded Rich Peverley and Tyler Seguin, and Nathan Horton signed with Columbus, and they replaced all three of those players with kind of average skating guys, they definitely lost a significant amount of their team speed, and it was a problem all year. Even they were masked it with other things, and it didn't creep up that much towards the end of the year when they went on that roll in March and really got things rolling. But it was always something that you knew was going to kind of creep up on them in the playoffs, and something that they were going to have to face and find a way around. And obviously they didn't do that. That's something they definitely have to address. I think the fourth line was an issue. It's been a strength in the past, and it's been one of the best things about the Bruins is it was the best fourth line in the NHL. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that was a liability in the series against Montreal. Dale Weiss had three goals as a fourth line player. Dale Weiss and Daniel Briere scored two of the three goals in Game 7 to win. They're both fourth line players, and they really outplayed Sean Thornton, Gregory Campbell, and Daniel Paille. So I would expect some changes on that fourth line as well. And maybe there'll be some other minor tweaks. I'm not sure if Jerome McGinley is going to be back after the 1 year. I don't think the major nucleus players are gone, even though there's some frustration maybe with Marchand especially and the way things went for him in this postseason. But I would expect that there's going to be some turnover and some price that's going to have to be paid for losing to the Canadiens in the second round.
Yeah, Joe, we just heard from Doug Wilson today out of San Jose talking about Havlat and Boyle, a pretty considerable piece, won't be back, that Burns will be going back to defense for them. When we talk about retooling the Bruins, you mentioned speed. You also touched on Iginla. What's the likeliest big news to come out of Peter Chiarelli in the next little while, if there is to be any?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think he's going to probably say the right things about Iginla, that they're going to talk and maybe try to make something happen. It's pretty clear, and the writing is on the wall, that if Iginla wants to come back to Boston, he's going to have to agree to another 1-year deal that's bonus-laden, similar to the one he signed this year. that was very cap friendly. I think that's the only way the Bruins can do it. You know, and he scored 30 goals this year. He had a pretty solid season and proved there's still something left in the tank, plenty left in the tank. So I think he probably has a multi-year deal with more money out there available to him from somebody else if he wants it. And it's really going to be up to him to decide what he wants to do. And, you know, I'm just not sure he's going to take another one-year deal like that to come back with the Bruins. And on their side, if they want to get faster, if they want to get younger, you know, that might be one of the places where they could look at to try to upgrade via trade. Is to get a player in there with Milan Lucic and David Krejci that's maybe a little faster and a little younger than Jerome Iginla was. That's a decision they're going to have to make. Like I said, I don't think they're going to announce that tomorrow. I don't think they're going to talk about specifically who's not coming back on the fourth line, but Sean Thornton is a free agent as of now. So I think the writing might be on the wall there as far as it goes with him and the season that he had. So there's a couple things like that they could probably address, but I think most of it, Shirelli's going to play his cards close to the vest and just do his work when free agency hits in July.
And lastly, Joe, I think we all agree Lucic definitely looked like a poor sport in that situation. I don't want to blow it up to more than that, but did that mirror the fact that maybe, you know, the Canadians had gotten so under the skin of some of the Bruins that they weren't really able to focus on what mattered?
Yeah, I think so to some degree. I definitely think you saw evidence of that at points. And, that's something that's just always going to be there for the Bruins and the Canadians. I think it's just part of the rivalry, and it's part of playing those teams so many times during the year and the way it goes. But, you know, if you're Milan Lucic, he's a competitor. He hates to lose. He's bitter about it. He's angry about it. He's furious about losing. I think that's part of what makes him great. It's part of what makes him such a competitor and such a good player in big games and a guy that, you know, you really want on your team. But at the same time, I think it also makes it difficult for him to know where the line is at all times and where he needs to stop at certain points. And, it's too bad because he's a guy that loves hockey history. He's a guy that has a lot of respect for the NHL and the game and for the, you know, the people that have come before him. And I think kind of making a mockery of the handshake line is something that he's probably going to be sorry about when he talks to us tomorrow, I would imagine, in regrets. Because it's one of the great things about the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's one of the great things about the NHL is that, you know, win, lose, or draw, when it's all over with, you shake the other guy's hand and you leave it there. And, you know, if you want to take a number and go after the guy next year because you think he wronged you, then you do that next year. But you don't need to make a big production out of it and make threats of guys in the handshake line and, you know, do what he did. And I think it wasn't a good look for him. It wasn't good sportsmanship. And it's not a good reflection on him. And I know him to be a better person and player than that. So it's just too bad he came off that way.
Joe, we appreciate it. And everybody will be watching the first Habs Bruins game next year for sure. Appreciate your time.
No doubt. It should be a good one.